Welcome to Casterbus. This week we are looking at some of the rumours and facts that we've been given about the future of Doctor Who and the BBC's deal with Disney Plus. There's also various meandering conversations between myself, Christian Corley, and him, James McLean, and we have a Patreon-only bit in which we discuss an upcoming book from Philip Bates about Sarah Jane Smith, and we also discuss Sarah Jane and some of the differences between the Doctors at the beginning and end of their times in the TARDIS. I hope you've had a nice summer break. I have, actually, quite unusually, without even going anywhere, because the weather's been quite nice. Now, James, I haven't spoken to much at all. So, James, have you had a good summer break?
Don't ask neurodivergent people questions like that, because they will tell you everything, and they know they don't want to tell you it, and they know you don't want to hear it, but they will tell you everything. It's been all right, I guess, is the standard. It's fine.
Well, the public persona of your Instagram has certainly seemed like you've had a nice summer break.
Yeah, there's been some nice things, but then we only post. It's a filtered, curated. It's a curated world.
Exactly. Yes, we don't. I mean, we don't post the state of the bins, do we, and things like that. I mean, I suppose there are people who do that, particularly in the Midlands. A little bit of satire, but. Generally speaking, we don't tend to do that. No, absolutely right. So, as you're getting this in video format on the Patreon, the day we're recording this, and you all have seen a few little bits and bobs that have popped through on the Patreon over the past few weeks that I've published. James, you may not be aware of what's gone on the Patreon recently, because that's kind of like the thing that I look after. But we've... conversation that I had with John Giler and Tim Follin a few years ago wasn't online anymore, so I've brought that back online about the game Contradiction, which I think I haven't had this confirmed, but I can't find any other material. I think was Paul Darrow's final
performance. I remember that.
Yeah. Good game, very good game. It is only available on Steam now. For PC and Mac.
Okay.
That's the only place you can get now. It used to be on iPad and on Amazon Fire as well, but it's only available on Steam now. I'd recommend anyone who hasn't played that, or just check out the trailer and see if you do fancy it, because it's a very good game, and it's got a feel of it's almost like you're in charge of an episode of Midsummer Murders. It's got that kind of comforty bit, but like an old Midsummer Murders in the John Nettles era, when there's a bit of like a hint of black magic going on in the background, you know.
I don't.
Another thing that we've also done recently, I've started a Substack for Casterbus, which is casterbus.substack.com, and weekly posts through the summer, various things. One of them, again, I looked back at Contradiction and FMV games, but particularly Contradiction because of its relevance to us. And so that's been going on, but also some of the other posts I've done, I've been reading them and publishing them on the Patreon. They're like 10-minute shorts, which they're additional material for our Patreon listeners, and they will eventually go out on a mainstream edition of the podcast. So there's a lot more content and material coming from us now. So I'm quite so excited about that.
Is this for the sort of cigar smoking, leather chair listening Patreon people, or is this going out to the riffraff?
What, today, or what I've just been talking about?
Yeah, this is what we're talking about now.
What we're talking about now. This edition, like any other, will go out first on Patreon in its complete form, and then a slightly shorter version will be given out to the masses. But the premium VIP cigar smoking. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they're the riffraff, to be clear. They are the listener. But I know that the Patreon people sitting in their digital smoking room see them as riffraff.
Yeah, with their extremely expensive faux leather chairs, which they're complete. You couldn't tell them apart from genuine leather. That's how good they are, and they're very expensive. Those people there, yes, they get the full ball, as it were.
I hear they're upholstered from the wardrobes of the riffraff. They go in.
That might explain.
Break into their properties, take their clothes, and then make their chairs out of them.
Thank God, it's just their clothes and not their skin. Got a bit dark there. Anyway,
that'd be creepy.
We are obviously, as you can tell by the title today, we're talking about Doctor
Who. The power is in taking the clothes. If you take their skin, they're no longer going to live. They're not going to realise the clear class and power disparity you've created.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
You can only do that by taking their clothes.
Also going to be very cold.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, these patron people, who knows?
So anyway, we have a single level Patreon, which is around £5 a month for your support for everything that we're putting out. So please check that out. And James and I are here to talk about Doctor Who today. There is possibly for several episodes, in fact, but for now, Doctor Who is kind of its continued existence as a television show seems to be somewhat appropriately enough in flux, doesn't it?
You mean it's quiet and
no one knows what's happening next? Yeah. We have had there's been various things going on. I mean, it's a bit. This is a thing between Doctor Who seasons. At the best of times, you have a bit of a sort of a silly season thing going on, and this, as you do with politics, and it's political silly season now, and it also seems to be Doctor Who silly season. The Edinburgh Television Festival is on at the moment. The Radio Times has reported that the BBC have confirmed that Doctor Who will continue with or without Disney, which is, that's been a key thing of Doctor Who since 2013, since 2023, since Russell T. Davies came back with Bad Wolf. So it's Kate Phillips, who's the Chief Content Officer at the BBC, and she was asked about the series' future at the Edinburgh TV Festival and said, "Any Whovians out there," because we all love that term, "rest assured, Doctor Who is going nowhere. Disney has been a great partnership and it continues with the war between the land and the sea next year. But going forward, with or without Disney, Doctor Who will still be on BBC." Now, a couple of things. First of all, the Radio Times has subtitled this article, "Doctor Who confirmed to Doctor Who confirmed to continue on BBC with or without Disney." And then in quotes, "the TARDIS is going nowhere." That's not how it works. It has to go somewhere for there to be a show. But secondly, the war between the land and the sea was supposed to be going out in a few weeks' time. Not next year. Now, to me, reading between the lines and taking a very quick view of this, and with the various years of observing Doctor Who and various BBC television shenanigans, as I have, that would say to me that there is absolutely nothing planned in terms of Doctor Who, and because we've had a series of Doctor Who this year, instead of having Doctor Who and the War Between the Land and the Sea this year, we're having the War Between the Land and the Sea next year as a bridge, or as a more hopeful bridge, because there is still nothing planned for Doctor Who. What do you say, James?
I don't see the issue here, because we're in a situation now where the BBC is in the middle. Clearly, they're in the middle of, well, it sounds like they're not in a position yet where there's talks to go ahead with Disney. And I suspect the issue is that until they know exactly what's going on with Disney, they're not going to say anything, because that might in some way impact on those decisions. So I think that's probably what this is all about. I know Davis recently said that he's out of sight of that conversation. That conversation between the BBC and his Bad Wolf have no particular part of that, is what I think he said. I think this is what a lot of this is. It's just simply, it's a commercial deal. Mm-hmm. It's a commercial agreement. And until that commercial agreement is an output, BBC's not going to say anything apart from the fact that they're going to continue the property on in some form or another, regardless of what happens with the deal. That seems to be the only interesting thing that comes out of this. And given that we know that it still makes money, that's not entirely surprising. But where the spin-off, why this is held back, as you said, possibly, as you say, because they're trying to maneuver it around whatever happens with Disney.
Yeah.
And they don't want to. And it could be that until they know exactly what's happening with Disney, they don't want to release it. It could be that that might be something that's up for agreement to actually be packaged as part of that agreement with Disney, in which case maybe Disney doesn't want it going, they don't want it to go out before that and thus lose its relevancy to the deal. That could be the reason why it's, you know, being kicked back again.
Yeah.
We don't know, do we? But that would be my, I don't think it's a counterpoint to you. I don't think we're sort of really in different spots here, but that would be my take.
Yeah.
I think it's a commercial tactic, which I think anyone would do when you've got a commercial property and you've not had the decision made or the agreement made about where it's going. You just don't really want to talk too much about it in case that affects that sort of that deal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows?
Well, it's the general conversation around Doctor Who is that no one knows what's happening. There's a lot of people out there who think that the show has been cancelled, but it hasn't been announced yet. Obviously, we've got this BBC content person at the Edinburgh Festival says otherwise, that it's coming back with or without Disney. That would seem to me a sort of a long-term commitment to making Doctor Who, but not necessarily in the immediate future if it's without Disney.
I don't read that at all. I think until we know what happens with the Disney deal, they're not going to say anything.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Disney then. Because we've looked at Disney a few times over the past few years, and they I don't know what that was. But most significantly, they have kind of revised their approach to various things over the past certainly over the past year in terms of the movies and television, and we know that they've like cancelled various shows, some for good reason, some because no one was watching them, or because people were watching them and people are like slightly up in arms over the fact that TV shows have gone missing halfway through their storyline. You can maybe explain this to me, James. Is there this notion of some TV shows being made as some sort of tax write-off?
Yeah, there is an argument that has been happening. It certainly happened with Willow. Allegedly, it's happened. Netflix has done it as well. This notion that if you remove the property, so it's no longer being accessed, you can write it off as part of your, I guess, your corporate tax. But I'm not a great finance person in my life, let alone in the complexities of these big deals. But yeah, I think this has been an approach to try and limit costs. But yes, it does mean that I think that property has to be entirely vanished for that to work, right. So you can't have it anywhere. And yeah, as you say, Willow TV series was one of allegedly the there's other ones, I say Netflix. I think Final Space was another one which might have gone through that same process.
So we know that, so we know that Disney is taking steps maybe to, I don't say curtail or cut back even, but maybe to focus its production in different areas, maybe, because they seem to be putting out the same amount of shows from what I can tell, just a lot of them seem to be more less drama and more documentaries.
I think there is definitely changes to the industry. We're seeing changes. Finally, we're seeing studios and distributors, whoever's ponying up the money, starting to really think about this notion that you put vast amounts of money behind something doesn't mean it's going to make vast amounts of money, or certainly not to the levels that you're wanting.
Yeah.
And what has been invested into it. So I think there was, one of these circulating articles. I don't know if there's any truth to it, but there was this rumor that they were looking at X-Men, the new X-Men lineup for Marvel to be unknown. So they're not sort of hit by the large price tags of celebrities. And we're seeing, Certainly, in the last decade, star power massively dwindling. People just don't. The notion of star power has kind of, it's not gone, but it, apart from a few certain names, it doesn't carry the same weight as it used to. So the logic being that, the idea being that if you're cinema, media is a risky business. So you have to pay so much up the front because you've got to make the whole thing. You've got to then sell the whole thing or distribute it. And you've got to put all this money up front, but you have no idea what the return's going to be.
Right.
And so frequently, as with music as well, quite frequently, the idea is you throw loads of stuff out and then you're hoping one of them hits big and that covers the losses of any of the others. That's kind of how the industry works. And one of the ways to stop this at one point was star power, because star power, if you had someone who was big, let's go back to the days of Brad Pitt or Steve McQueen, is, you know, those sort of big names, you could drop them into a film and you would know that that would almost guarantee a certain audience who would be safe.
Yeah.
You know, the same way that you'd go with sequels. And we still do that with sequels. Sequels is a way of partially, hopefully, giving at least some sense of guarantee that your very fickle audiences might go for this thing. And the other one is obviously genre. If sci-fi is big, you make sci-fis because people are watching sci-fis. Yeah, if comedies have got big, et cetera, et cetera. But star power is a big one, but that's now dwindled. You can't guarantee it. Eternals is a very good example where I can't remember which one of the Eternals was talking the other day, the film, and sort of saying how when that was being released, they were expecting this was like a 10-year thing where they would be doing spin-offs and video games and everything. And this was going to be the big thing. And it didn't ignite, and none of that happened. And, you know, they were kind of shocked. And again, there was quite a few people, and there were some unknown names, but there were a few people that were, in theory, thought there was leverage in their names, but it doesn't carry. You look at the Marvel Universe, not many of those translate to big names outside of the Marvel Universe. You don't see them carrying successful films outside of those spaces, particularly. Some of them, to some degree, have, but even people like Tom Holland, who is kind of like one of the big leading names that people know from that franchise, their films aren't guaranteed to be massive successes if they go into them. So star power has kind of died away. And I've now totally forgot why I'm talking about star power. Why am I talking about star power?
We were talking about Disney and winding back. But I mean,
So I think the point being is it's far harder for Disney to know. They're not sure what's going to work anymore.
No.
And it's becoming far harder to work out what's going to sell your property. So that was it. Yes. So they're scaling back on things like who they cast. So you're no longer, for once, for the first time I've heard, that they're turning around and sort of going, these big franchises are going, we can't, if we get so-and-so in, that does no way guarantee success. In fact, we have to pay far too much to have them in, which goes into our budget. Let's have someone unknown, because star power doesn't carry that weight anymore. So you're seeing the industry shift. And I think that is a big deal, that we are now seeing it reconfigured. So yes, this goes back to what you were saying. We're seeing a shift into what is being made. And funny enough, it almost feels like the 90s, where suddenly in the UK, you know, factual television took a big, factual entertainment certainly took a big rise, because you got TV shows which were cheap, fun to make, people would watch, they didn't cost much, and there was suddenly more of a schedule to fill. So suddenly, you know, we saw the rise of popular entertainment, and all these shows, certainly reality TV as a big one, became big. And, you know, are we seeing that sort of thing again, where, yeah, those shows are cheaper than making another Andor or making another Willow? Sorry about that. That was a very long answer, a very winding road. I'm sorry. And I'm not sure I think we have actually stopped in a field. Don't know where the field is. There might be a signpost nearby for you to actually find your way back to where you wanted to talk about, but I doubt it.
Oh, no. So, I mean, yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that. I'm not entirely sure about the star thing, because unless there is like an unwritten rule that it doesn't apply to anything with Pedro Pascal.
Well, that's exactly the problem. I was listening to another podcast recently, and they were sort of saying how there was a survey of UK, and it was stars that people knew and the percentage of people who knew them. And it was amazingly, you know, apart from Keanu Reeves, who was kind of like the known one, there weren't many that were sort of hitting, apart from the people for, you know, older generations, people like us who will be very aware of Keanu Reeves and Harrison Ford. And yes, your younger people, there will be Zendaya, there will be, there are a couple of names, but if you think about back to the 90s, you think of the Brat Pack back in the 80s, these were names of people who would just sell films. You put the Brat Pack in, the Keith Sutherlands, the Christian Slaters, Emilio Estevez, all those, they would sell films.
Yeah,
now we're in a space where there's no guarantee of that, apart from a couple of certain names who might. And I think like Zendaya is one of them, and Keanu possibly is one of them.
Tom Cruise?
There's not many of them left. So Tom Cruise, Tom Cruise has managed to hold on to that.
Yeah.
but it's a dying breed. We don't live in that sort of space anymore. And that's harder for the, again, this whole idea that this is a risky business. How do we know what's going to sell? And they don't. Because we're fickle. And you think that shows have to be made, films are made years in advance. And at that point, they've got to guess where people's tastes are going to be years ahead of time. And sometimes they get to that point and they're kind of not. And that's the problem. And with going back to Doctor Who, I think it depends on that agreement and how much it's costing Disney. And as far as what we're aware from people we've talked to, it's not one of their heavy hitters in terms of costs to them. So it might be that that will mean that it's fine, especially if there's catalog. There's, if, you know, again, like as you say, if there's an extra catalog which might be attached to it, that might give them more incentive.
Yeah,
we don't know, but I think it's encouraging that, like you said, to go back to the original point, that if Disney does say no, which as I say, as you say, we're in a flux here. I could see Disney scaling back on some of this expensive sci-fi, high-cost entertainment for documentaries, which can do quite well. Netflix has found. If they do, it's still a flagship for the BBC. The BBC do still rely on it as brand and for money, that it would probably still go out. But like you say, when and when, we don't know. But I don't think, and again, this comes back to what's the term, the white elephant in the room, that people still feel that the last couple of seasons have not been to a quality where they, understandably from their perspective, don't believe that it's got anywhere left to go. So they're kind of anticipating that this is a demonstration of that, and I don't think it is. I think that's the question.
There's two things going on.
I think there is. I think there's a lot of people, as we've said before, people misinterpret viewing figures, which are now just out the window in terms of deciding what is really working. It's a question of what is making money. And that is sometimes behind the scenes in terms of distribution, in terms of merchandise, in terms of being a leader, you know, a brand leader for your company, say the BBC, you know, Doctor Who's known around the world. That itself can be something that gives it value regardless of how much.
And presumably social media like YouTube and Instagram clips and TikToks and stuff, that all comes, that all feeds into...
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of things here. And and that's not for a moment to say that I think I'm right and it's going to exist. I'm just saying, I don't think this idea of looking at viewing figures and then trying to, often we correlate that to our own tastes, and that's human nature, and go, I don't like this. Oh, look, the viewing figures are down. That proves that it's going to get cancelled. I don't think it works like that anymore. I could be wrong, and there could be various other reasons to be cancelled. But that's it. That's how it is. And again, people who feel like it is, its messages are too hard hitting. I do think the concerns about how woke Doctor Who is a misunderstanding that woke is not a left, you know, it is a lefty sort of thing, but it's also a, you know, in terms of television, it's a capitalism sort of thing. You know, you want to, you know, capitalism, as we've said this before, now knows, TV knows that they've got multicultural audiences, which are now global because things sell across the world. Mm-hmm. So you're always going to want to try and throw, you want representation there to bring in those audiences. So they watch your show, so you make money. So a lot of the sort of diversity that we see in television now is not really about a left-wing agenda. A lot of it is about capitalism. It's about making money, stretching who's actually going to watch it. And you only need someone to be represented in that show, one person, and that might bring that person in and make them feel identified with that show. So ultimately, yeah, writers, I think, like to explore diversity and often are people probably on that side of the political wing. But ultimately, a lot of all these things and how Doctor Who speaks to now is the fact it's a global show and it's trying to make sure that its audiences watch it, feel represented by, and that makes it less targeted in a way.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that. I don't think that quality of storylines, if you don't, those are things we can debate about.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, those are grounds. But I think the situation with Doctor Who now is not to do with its ideology. I think its ideology is representative of consumerism, not of...
Going to offer a slightly different take on that. In, when was it? Was it 2017? It was 2017. So Doctor Who had just sold a big... BBC had sold a global deal for Doctor Who in around 2017 to some specific countries. Let's call them conservative countries. And then they cast a female doctor. Okay? And then a few years later... They've expanded their deal, brought in a lot of, let's say, conservative Arabic countries, and they cast a black doctor with a what's the word I'm looking for? A diverse style set, wardrobe. I'm not convinced these two things work. I think there's possibly a very white liberal European / North American take on what is global and what is diverse that maybe doesn't sell in particular parts of the world where people are actually buying, you know, where networks are actually buying the TV show. And I'm not saying this feeds into this directly, but it does seem to me to be not entirely, the two things don't kind of marry to me.
Well, the bottom line to me is, if that was a massive, massive issue, then then the BBC wouldn't allow any sort of diversity, or they wouldn't allow certain conditions which would go against them being able to sell the show.
It's like short-sighted and doesn't perhaps marry with the what the two things just don't seem to mix to me. That's the only thing. So, but at the same time, I don't know what the audience for Doctor Who is in the Middle East. No, we don't.
Absolutely. And I could be wrong. As you said, it could be that people like Russell T. Davies, who are very proudly progressive and left-leaning, make these decisions, and the BBC's got no choice. It just goes with it. But if you look at output, especially in science fiction across, as you say, the Western Hemisphere, it is now extremely more diverse than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's down to authorship. I think to some elements it can be, but I think if it wasn't selling, they wouldn't do it. Yeah. I think it's as simple as that, because it's a money-making industry. It has to be, especially now. So I could be wrong, but I just kind of feel that I think that's overlooked, that the reason that we have more representation is because there's more representation in the market which is watching it. And you are right, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to sell everywhere, and in some spaces it could not. And it could be, for all we know, we could see in the future, if that becomes a bigger thing, it'll be interesting to see whether diversity changes again to reflect if more of the markets are kind of like, no, we want this certain way, or we're not interested.
Because
we see how, you know, to get material into China has always been quite difficult for the States, because China's got a very, what would be the word? Not curated, but they only certain films can get passed to go into China. And so we've seen how much, especially the American market, will edit, curtail, add,
reshoot,
to reshoot to get it into that space. And that's solely what it's there for, is to make money, because that's what these industries are about.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, diversity is and we will see that, because there's people like Russell T. Davies who are very passionate about these things. But on the other side, which I think allows that to flow, is that it's not, they don't feel it's losing the money. And until it feels like they're losing the money, then maybe we'll see a change. So I think, going back to the point about Doctor Who, as I said, I don't think we can look at the viewing figures and the content and sort of go, Doctor Who's in the wrong space because of that, necessarily. But then at the same time, like you said, global markets are very nuanced, and the markets have opened up in this way. We're talking about, 12 years in of streaming, where we've seen the markets sort of split out from being all about national broadcasters and distributors, but now things like Netflix, which are far more divorced from those sort of regulatory bodies of national, you know, the market's shifted so much and become naturally more global.
Yeah.
Mistakes are going to be made. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they Doctor Who has to be different for it to work globally in the way they want. But I think at the moment, the thinking is that's not an issue.
Yeah.
The issue probably is, I think, that it's a very busy, cluttered market, and it's hard to sell in that. You know, like we've said, 15 years ago, Doctor Who, you'd be fighting one or two things. Now, at the moment, every week there's a new sci-fi show on Disney or Netflix, which it's got to compete with for visibility, whether it's Alien Earth or whether it's Severance or whether it's whatever. You know, there's so much there which people who watch Doctor Who would watch. That's where I think it's struggling. It's choked by there just being so much stuff. And a lot of that stuff is kind of fresh and cool. And Doctor Who is 60 years old.
Yeah.
More than that now.
Yeah. Well, Well, I want to come back to Doctor Who in a minute from a slightly different angle. But before I do that, have you seen Alien Earth?
No, I've not. I'm not particularly.
I watched the trailer. Again, it's...
I watched the trailer.
It looked kind of intriguing. I wasn't that keen on it at first, apart from the fact that I knew that Aid Edmondson was in it. But you know, there's plenty of things that Aid Edmondson's been in that I haven't watched, so that wasn't like my big draw. But I watched the trailer and it looked kind of intriguing, so I'm not against watching the first episode.
I think the problem for me is the trailer was interesting so far as I really found this sort of focus on synthetics being the thing which was selling it as being interesting and the lost. But as soon as the xenomorphs back in, you just think, well, it's the same as before. We're going back to the same thing because it is, unless it can only do what it's going to do. And if you like that, that's great. But I'm kind of bored of that, and so I'm not interested.
Well, it's a prequel to Alien as well, isn't it? It's set before Alien.
Yeah.
So,
but then so was Covenant, and so was Prometheus.
Well, yeah, but the difference being that it's on a particular planet in the title. So, in that respect, then there has to be. It's almost as if, as with Andor in a way, you kind of know what the end's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. And even structurally, you know what it's going to be. And you know all the things which you've got to be in there. And if you want that, that's great. I mean, obviously, some people could say the same about the Daleks. You go, yeah, I get that. And that's kind of why the Daleks are a bit boring now as well. The franchise has never massively interested me. The things which I think are interesting in the franchise is the sort of fight, certainly in the 80s, was the fight against corporate, merciless corporate power. Yeah. And I know that's part of this again, but it's been part of it so many times. I mean, I find Predator a little less that way, because the Predators can have a certain different motivations and characteristics, which means you're not got the same unstoppable killing machine, unstoppable, unthinking killing machine, parasitic killing machine thing. There's actually a little more nuance to it. I thought Prey was great.
Yeah.
But it's not for me, but...
Yeah, Daleks aren't going to shag you, are they?
No, not yet anyway. Well, you know, there's been cases where it looked like they could have gone down that approach. And there's certainly been metamorphosis with Daleks.
I've just remembered Daleks in Manhattan.
Well, I was thinking Revelation of the Daleks, but yeah.
Well, yeah, that guy in Daleks in Manhattan was certainly equipped. Let's move on.
I tell you something, actually, just on a rando thing. I was looking at an old Starburst the other day, which found online. And it was, again, it does tie into kind of what we were talking about. And I was looking at letter pages, because if you find an old Starburst, or if you find an old magazine, TV Zone or whatever, the most fascinating things, and I think the most telling things, are the letters page.
Yeah.
Because you really get a sense of what people were thinking at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was this really long letter talking about how the guy said, I love Star Wars, just watch Empire Strikes Back, it's great. But what is this force? What does it really mean? it doesn't really make sense. And it goes on to sort of compare it to certain real world religious ideologies, and that's all interesting. But ultimately, it was just interesting to see how, you know, where we look now when we see Empire Strikes Back, and we see it as the sort of pillar of Star Wars as being the sort of the only, you know, the ultimate thing.
Yeah.
And yet back then, you've got the same sort of suspicion, criticisms, not liking, it's not quite Star Wars that we see now. And just... just a reminder that, you know, what we think is rubbish now in 20 years time can be great seen in a different way. And we can see the same with Blade Runner.
Yeah. It's funny. I was trying to sell Rogue, well, not so much Rogue One, but Andor to someone a few days ago. And I basically, it's Star Wars without the space wizards and the magic swords.
Yeah.
It's just like an oppressive world. Like it's the Star Wars from the first 20 minutes of the film. Basically,
yeah, that's a really nice way of putting it.
Yeah,
because I was going to say one of the issues I have with Andor, and people say it's the true Star Wars, I would say no, it's in some ways it's the antithesis of Star Wars, because people, the general audiences who go to watch Star Wars, they look for a fun, exciting fantasy adventure. That's what Star Wars should be. Andor is absolutely the opposite, even though, as you say, I like the idea of you sort of saying the first 20 minutes of Star Wars is kind of, you're right, absolutely, it's what Andor plays on and expands. And I love Andor, it's great.
Yeah,
but I think people who sort of valorize it as being what Star Wars should be, I think if you did that, Star Wars would not have the global phenomenon, because I think it's a hard show to watch in a lot of ways, because it's cerebral, it's dark, it shows you exactly what Star Wars would, if Star Wars was honest, would be showing you what that world is like. It's not exciting, full of adventures and running around. It's full of oppression, people being miserable, and it's fascist, you know, it's terrible.
I immediately thought that's the reason why Judge Dredd isn't like a massive movie franchise, because that's kind of a pretty miserable sort of a world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can't see. I mean, obviously, it depends on how you do it, because Dredd is a bit like the Justice League and Batman. Mm. You know, Batman is, as we've said before, you know, a dude who likes to kick in poor people who are doing bad crimes because his mum and dad were killed by a poor person, or, you know, a rogue person. But also, he's a guy who can take on gods, because Justice League requires him to be that way. They're not really the same person.
Sure.
And the same with Dredd. Dredd can either be someone who is fighting ridiculous monsters and arch villains, and ultimately he can be a satire. He can be, or he can be quite a serious social commentary. It's like, which Dredd are you?
And
perhaps there is a room for a Dredd which perhaps plays a little closer to the satire and to the social realism. But then that, I suppose, yeah, you're right. Even that would be kind of a difficult thing to sell. It's, I mean, what would that be like? Again, is that Andor?
I think it's probably closer to that than it is to, you know, swashbuckling superheroes or whatever. The next segment of the podcast is myself and James discussing an upcoming book about Sarah Jane Smith. So if you're a Patreon listener, carry on listening. If you're not part of our Patreon, I'll see you at the end of the show. That brings us to the end of this week's Castorbis. Anything you want to ask us, do drop us a line via the usual social media options. Don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter if you want an article from me or from someone else, because I'm lining up some other people to contribute as well. And you can sign up on the Patreon to listen to the podcast before everyone else and get the full edition as well. Until next time, it's goodbye from myself and James.